Lunchtime Live on News Talk.
Thanks to VideoDoc. See a GP online anytime for prescriptions and sick notes. Download the VideoDoc app. VideoDoc.ie.
This is Ciara and this is a Lunchtime Live podcast from News Talk. If you like what you hear, don't forget that you can subscribe via the app or on iTunes and make sure to check us out at newstalk.com/lunchtimelive. Thanks for listening.
If you're still struggling with consent, just imagine instead of initiating sex, you're making them a cup of tea. You say, hey, would you like a cup of tea? And they go, oh my God, I would love a cup of tea, thank you. Then you know they want a cup of tea. If you say, hey, would you like a cup of tea? And they're like, I'm not really sure. Then you can make them a cup of tea, or not, but be aware that they might not drink it. And if they don't drink it, then, and this is the important bit, don't make them drink it. Just because you made it doesn't mean you're entitled to watch them drink it. And if they say, no thank you, then don't make them tea. At all. Just don't make them tea. Don't make them drink tea. Don't get annoyed at them for not wanting tea. They just don't want tea, okay?
Okay, and if you don't know what we're talking about there, we're talking about consent. And pupils in Irish schools are about to be given classes on sexual consent as part of a major overhaul on the relationships and sex education curriculum. And pupils around the country are currently studying a course in terms of sex education that is 20 years old. Have a think about that. Have a think about how social mores and sexual mores have changed over the past 20 years. Education Minister Richard Bruton has recommended that several areas be changed in our sex education curriculum, including consent, the safe use of the internet, LGBTQ matters and contraception. All of these things need to be considered for inclusion in this revamped curriculum. But what conversations do we need to have with our kids and our young people about sex? And does it need to start outside the classroom and younger than we think? To discuss all of this, I'm joined now by Joanne Fortune, psychotherapist who works with children and adolescents. Joanne, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Ciara.
For what it's worth, I think this is a massively, massively important area. And I know we've been talking a lot about, particularly there's been the high profile court cases and all sorts of things. So consent is kind of a buzzword and a byword. But there's much more important reasons than just because it's in the news to talk about it. 20 years since the sex education curriculum has been overhauled. Are we letting down our kids?
Oh, definitely. And I think, you know, it's timely that it's overdue, in fact, that this course is revised. Like, any curriculum shouldn't be stagnant for 20 years because of the nature and changing landscape of culture. So this doesn't just apply to the sex education course, but if there was any part of the curriculum that was stagnant and unchanged for 20 years, I'd be saying it's overdue an overhaul.
Yeah. And 20 years, when you think about it, back in the late 90s, it was a very different era. I mean, at that point, we certainly didn't have the marriage equality. I think people were much more inhibited about what the way they viewed sex and talked about sex. But one of the big, huge changes, well, of course, is the internet.
Oh, absolutely. And the commonplace access to pornography from young ages. And that immediately changed the landscape of how we talk about sex and how we need to talk to our young people about sex. And that wasn't something that was prevalent 20 years ago, so it wouldn't have featured in the course or anyone's psyche around how you talk to kids about sex at that time. So it's an uncomfortable subject that we need to get comfortable talking about.
Yeah. I heard lots of different people recently talking about it. And one of the things that I heard a lot of people talking about in terms of pornography is that particularly for boys, it seems that the age, and this is much younger than perhaps some parents are aware, but that the age of 10 or 11 is the normal average age that boys start to look at pornography with any kind of frequency. We're not stepping in at that age with graphic sexual education for our young people. So are we by default almost, Joanne, allowing them to get sex education through things like porn and not protecting them from that and replacing it with maybe a better message? I think this is a huge worry for all of us and for parents and for society.
Yeah, and I think it should be a worry, to be honest, because it's not just porn and they're accessing it as soon as they have smartphones or digital devices, but it's also free porn, which, as everyone knows, tends to be the, you know, more violent, more aggressive. Women are much more objectified more frequently in that type of porn. And that's where not just young boys, but young girls are also going to get their sex education about what they believe is expected from them, what they should demand, what they should give, take, all of that kind of language, and as well as that, what their body should look like. It's why you've got very young girls going for full body waxes, because they believe body hair is unsightly, disgusting and repulsive, because that is the image that's being reinforced for them. So it is a conversation that we're already overdue having, but I don't want to kind of minimize and simplify that either, Kira, because it's, you know, a lot of parents listening to this never imagined, you know, that they'd be sitting with their 9 or 10 year old child and saying, we need to have a conversation about porn, when you may never have discussed porn with anyone in your life. You're now doing it with your child.
Who so, may have seen more porn than you have.
Very likely. And I think that's very uncomfortable. And we'd be remiss to kind of casualize that and say, so you just get over yourself now and have that chat. I think parents need support and help in accessing the appropriate language to have a discussion like that. And again, as do teachers in schools, I think we can expect an awful lot from our teachers that suddenly now they're all going to be experts in talking about pornography and consent. It takes time for people to get there. It's important that everybody's singing off the same page and that the information that we're giving our children is in response to their developmental level and the types of questions that they're going to have, as opposed to us trying to go, right, we're going to get all of this out and covered now by the time they're 10 and then I can breathe and I won't have to look at it again until they're 14. It's an ongoing conversation and we have to grow it up as our children grow up.
But this is, I suppose, the nub of it that I'm trying to work through in my own head, Joanne. Like, we have always had a certain amount of sex education for our kids in school. Now, to be honest, I don't think it's adequate myself, but we've always kind of pitched it age appropriately. So we did stuff on, you know, when they're small, on privacy and inappropriate touching and if somebody makes you uncomfortable and all that kind of talk. Yeah. And it was all very gentle. And then you work up to when they're actually in secondary school, you actually talk about the physical act of sex and various things like that. And now we're talking about, you know, in third level education, you know, maybe introducing consent classes and all that kind of stuff. And I want to get to consent in a second, so park that for a moment. But if that's the way we're teaching it in schools, but actually the kids are looking at porn at 9 and 10 and 11 and we're still talking about things like inappropriate touching, we're so far behind what they've already seen because we don't want to put on them stuff that's inappropriate, that we're kind of the ship is sailing without us. Do we need to get a bit realer, even though it's very, very uncomfortable for us in Ireland in our slightly prudish way to discuss sex baldly with small children?
Yes, we do. For sure we do. And again, you know, you can start that in a myriad of ways. And I think you're right that it's partly because we don't want to put upon our children discussions about, you know, rape or sexual violation. I mean, they're not things we want to put upon our young children. So we tend to kick that can down the road and we talk to them about staying safe and, you know, minding their bodies and what's a private part and what's not a private part. And we use that kind of language. And then we think, you know, that's fine. And they learn the rest as they grow, like we all did. But it's actually different now. Parenting is different. Raising children is different. And that's largely because of what the internet gives us access to. And there are pros and cons to that. Because if you're a parent struggling with how do I speak about this with my child, you'll also find, you know, blogs and contributions and suggestions on the internet for exactly how you can approach this with young children. So you can look at it in two ways. But if your child has regular access to a smart device, you have got to be having this conversation way, way earlier than you've imagined having it.
Okay, which is quite scary, I would imagine, for a lot of parents. Just coming back to the notion of consent, like a lot of people are talking about, and some people are against them, in fact, the notion that in third level institutions that the conversation around consent needs to happen and all that kind of stuff. But again, is that not the horse having bolted already? If we're going to be talking to 20-year-olds about consent, should we not be talking to 6-year-olds about consent? Like, how young is too young to have these conversations?
I'm a fan of starting these conversations really young. Like, I think we should be talking to our very young children using proper words for their anatomy and their private parts and not kind of making them cutesy and fuzzy. I think we've got to be naming it, this is your vagina, this is your penis. I think when children ask us questions, they're telling us they're ready for a certain level of information. Be very careful that you don't give them, you know, the full biological detail they didn't ask for, but ask the question that is answered and answer it honestly. But I think the good news is that we can start teaching kids about, things like consent from a very young age without confronting discussions about rape if that's not where you want to go. Because we can model and talk about the kind of foundation skills for learning about consent as early as toddler years. And then you build on that as your child develops. So I'm not saying you have this conversation with your toddler and you flood them with information, but you begin it. And it begins like talking to them about my body, my rules. That's the beginning of talking mm-hmm. about consent, that it's your body, your rules. Talking to them about things like keeping their hands to themselves. You know, a rule is I keep my hands to myself. Other people keep their hands to themselves. Talking about hugging and kissing is a choice that both people make. And if somebody doesn't want to kiss or you don't want to give them a kiss, you don't have to. So we have to move away from insisting our children kiss their relatives. But allowing them to decide what way do they want to say hello. Is that with a kiss, a hug, a handshake, a high five, whatever it might be, empowering them from that young age. And I think these are small ways that you can begin this conversation that then allows you an in that you can come back and grow that conversation up as they grow.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't know where we're going with this. And lots of people with very differing points of view on the text line as well. Someone says, Chris says he's a teacher. Is there any possibility parents would take some responsibility for teaching their child about consent? No, of course not. Dump it on the schools.
Oh, no, I totally agree with Chris on that. And I would be the first to say that we shouldn't be putting this on schools and certainly not schools alone. But at best, it should be a collaborative approach. And that would mean that parents are in with whatever training and input that teachers are getting on this topic. We should be giving it to parents as well so they can work on this collaboratively.
Yeah, absolutely. Someone else says, Ciara, we need to address why children of 10 have access to porn in the first place, which is true, yeah. But we're naive to think they don't, Joanne.
Oh, no, absolutely. And again, that's not an inaccurate statement. We do need to address that. And that's part of a bigger conversation about digital age of consent and what age should children be accessing devices and what level of supervised or unsupervised access. I remember a couple of years back, we were talking about, you know, default on and off options for pornography at the point of purchase. And that was being looked at very seriously in the UK. So there are a number of things that were looked at, but nothing really developed out of it. And then you come to the point, well, we are where we are. We can't shut that gate after the horse has bolted, as you said. So we've got to now go in there and put information in to help young people make sense of something that they're really too young to make sense of on their own.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ken in Waterford says, I'd love to know what you think of this, Joanna. Pornography is normalising extreme sexual behaviour and attitudes in terms of consent. Because of the hearsay element involved, consent appears to be something that might be retrospectively retracted. I'm only half joking when I say that my sons will be advised to get consent on video. I presume they mean on their phone to avoid confusion. I've heard that said before, and I'd love to know what you think, because I think two things. I think one, in the whole kind of revenge porn, slut-shaming world that we live in, I think any girl who gives consent on a video would be very foolish,
yeah,
because that could be thrown back in her face, A. But B, I also think if you're that adversarial before you have sex with somebody, don't be having sex with them.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. If you have that level of uncertainty about consent and whether consent has been given, then do not proceed would be the best advice. Because consent doesn't have to be this legalistic thing that we're all talking about, like sit down there now and sign this contract before we take this any further. And what exactly are you consenting to? Can I hold your hand or is that not consented to? I think we can actually overcomplicate this by being dismissive of it, when actually consent is a mature thing. It's something that is an ongoing part of a sexual exchange, and it helps us to move away from this idea that sex is something that women give and men take,
yeah,
or men demand. And I think it's so unhealthy that we think like this, that our sons have to get consent.
Mm.
That's not how it works. Consent is an exchange because the sexual act is an exchange, and that's how it should be. And it should be, is this okay? Are you okay with this? Does this feel good for you? These are ways that you get ongoing consent during the sexual act.
Yeah.
And I think we have to grow up, all of us, not just young people on this. I think we all have to grow up and see that this is there because it's a positive, healthy thing, and it's going to keep us all safe,
all right,
and ensure that this is pleasurable, and move away from seeing it as something that gets in the way of pleasure.
Okay. Joanna Fortune, their psychotherapist. Thank you very much for that indeed. And I have loads of texts I'll hopefully get to on this whole issue.
Thanks again for listening to this Lunchtime Live podcast. Please do subscribe via the app or on iTunes and check us out on newstalk.com/lunchtimelive. Talk to you again soon.